few weeks ago, I spoke to the NPR media reporter David Folkenflik about the hard task of reporting on your own news organization. This week, it was the turn of our producing station, WNYC, to turn the spotlight on itself. This podcast is a curation of some of the on-air conversations that have been taking place since some shocking news broke Friday night. I'm recording this on Tuesday afternoon. You will hear sadness, anger, and frustration both from the hosts and from listeners, too. The reckoning began first thing Monday morning.
6:04, 41 degrees, some fog and mist right now in New York City. Sunrise time of 7.
Local Morning Edition host Richard Hake brought the news to WNYC listeners.
The WNYC newsroom asked reporter Ilya Maritz to look into questions about one of our own colleagues, John Hockenberry. He hosted the show, The Takeaway, for nearly a decade before leaving the station this summer. Ilya, good morning.
Hi, Richard.
So obviously, this is a very difficult story for us both to report and to digest, but we're here to be honest. We're here to be transparent. Over the weekend, New York Magazine's website, The Cut, ran a first-person piece by a former Takeaway guest who said she was harassed by John. So what have we learned so far?
Ilya laid out the charges, some from his own reporting and some from the New York Magazine article.
In 2011, a producer on The Takeaway who was meeting with John in a room, just the two of them alone, talking about the show, was kissed by John. Mm. Unexpectedly, it was unwelcome. She fled the room, and about a year later, she left the show.
And she didn't tell anybody about it.
That's right. Also, about a year after that incident, a different female producer was propositioned for a hotel room. As you say, neither of those incidents was reported to upper management mm-hmm. outside the show.
Right.
Then this year, the writer of the New York Magazine piece, Suki Kim, made a complaint. It was actually a WNYC producer who submitted that complaint on her behalf. Kim said John pursued her in ways that were obnoxious and irritating and weird. They weren't necessarily sexual harassment. They were certainly uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And in her story, she also relates one more instance of sexual harassment. And that's former Takeaway producer Kristen Meinzer, who went on the record to say John kissed her and made lewd comments. And she very recently wrote a letter describing her experiences to CEO Laura Walker.
Ilya concluded his report by saying that no one from upper management had spoken to him for his reporting. At 9 a.m., The Takeaway, hosted since Hockenberry's departure this summer by longtime contributor Todd Zwillick, interviewed the author of the New York Magazine piece, Suki Kim, and concluded by saying that they too had asked management for an interview and had been turned down. Then at 10 o'clock, Brian Lehrer, host of WNYC's live two-hour morning call-in show, took the baton.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. When we left here on Friday, we were planning to lead today's show with the topics of Michael Flynn's plea deal and its weekend repercussions, and the Senate passing its tax cut bill, and we will get to those things. But as many of you have heard, this organization, WNYC, now has a Me Too moment of its own. And it's my duty to you, the audience, as well as the editorial judgment of me and my team, that we deal with this first and report on our own institution, awkward as that is for anyone to do.
Brian added more nauseating detail to Ilya's earlier report.
Another former employee said of the environment in general with Hockenberry, he's touching your waist, hips, he totally touched my ass, and she added there were lots of sex jokes. The article also describes him sending sexually inappropriate email or other online messages to another woman with the show. That was in 2013, after she announced she was leaving the show, proposing that they get a hotel room together, John did. Also messages to two different interns and to the writer, Suki Kim, an investigative reporter and North Korea expert. In Kim's case, the emails began close to a year after she was a guest on the show, and then came not just one or two, but a series of them spread through 2016 and into this year, even though she was not responding to him, not emailing him back. One of the interns quoted in the article said Hockenberry told her in a meeting one time that, quote, your shoulders are really distracting, unquote, and there was more.
One added wrinkle to this story is that the Takeaway was launched with the mission of adding diverse voices to Drive Time Public Radio to offer a fresh sensibility to change the vibe. Yet early in the show's history, John cycled through several co-hosts, all distinct voices, and all women of color.
In another section, he's described as treating three successive African-American woman co-hosts in ways that were not alleged to be sexually inappropriate, but were bullying and professionally demeaning, as described, like interrupting them when they were speaking on the air and telling the very established journalist and host for Aisha Dea, who was there temporarily at one point, that she shouldn't stay with the show permanently just as a, quote, diversity hire, and that she should lose weight. Farai did complain to the station president, Laura Walker, at the time, according to the article.
In a statement to New York Magazine, John Hockenberry said he does not deny anything, and he says he has no excuses.
He also says that given his own physical limitations, as many of you know, he has been getting around in a wheelchair and paralyzed from the chest down since a car accident when he was a teenager. He's now 61. He told New York Magazine that that should have given him an understanding of powerlessness and, quote, or it did give him an understanding of powerlessness and therefore, quote, I should have known how the power I wielded over others, coupled with inappropriate comments and communications, could be construed, unquote.
Brian Lehrer also read a statement from management, which had also declined to appear on his show that morning.
In a written statement yesterday, WNYC President and CEO Laura Walker apologized. She wrote this: the offensive conduct, as reported, would clearly violate New York Public Radio standards and workplace practices. As CEO, I deeply regret that our culture and protocols did not work as they should, such that the full nature and extent of the allegations are just now coming to light. I apologize. We can do better. And I give our employees and the entire New York Public Radio community my word that the senior team and I will do our utmost to ensure that New York Public Radio will safeguard all employees, provide an equitable, respectful, inclusive, and harassment-free environment, and take prompt action when necessary. That from WNYC President and CEO Laura Walker.
What followed was Brian Lehrer, paragon of poise and equanimity, a man whom I regard as the conscience of New York City, if not its very soul, kind of lose his shit. Shame and betrayal will do that.
Just speaking for myself, I've said before that men have to play leadership roles when it comes to ending sexual misconduct, and now the plague has been revealed to exist also at my own institution. I had hoped, as a place committed to positive values, that we might have been immune. I am horrified. I am disappointed. I am angry at John Hockenberry for doing the things reported. I personally think workplaces should have very little tolerance for bullying and power tripping, not to mention, of course, sexual harassment. I don't like any of this. I am disgusted. And I don't want to work with men who do things like that. I don't want them as colleagues. Further, I am literally ashamed to be a man. When I hear of so many of these things, almost always committed by men, I didn't know about any of them in Hockenberry's case until the article came out. I had heard rumors as he was leaving this summer that maybe it was about sexual harassment, which is the first I'd ever heard of that connected with him. I also didn't know about the bullying. We don't work on the same floor. I never witnessed it. No one from the Takeaway ever talked to me about it. I just wasn't in the loop about Takeaway workplace culture. And maybe there was a network, a whisper network of women that didn't make it to me. Often men are excluded from this for good reason. And I'll add my voice to those who are saying station management needs to speak. We invited management on the program this morning, but they declined, citing the confidentiality of personnel matters. With me now is Suki Kim, investigative reporter, writer of the New York Magazine Story. And
towards the end of his interview with Kim, Brian asked this question.
Before you go, a hard decision for many women victims has been whether to come forward. Now that your story is out, including your personal account, how does it feel and what might other women learn from it, and anything else you want to say.
You know, those women who are in my story are incredibly brave. The ones who came on record, amazing. The ones who are too scared to come on the record because they all need jobs in public radio. You know, women shouldn't live in fear like that and let them do their job. You know, all they wanted to do was walk into this institution, WNYC, and just do their job. And in every possible way, they were derailed. If it was a young intern or a young producer or accomplished, those three hosts, Adora, Doji, Farai, Chidea, Celeste Headley, you know, why not nurture female and let them do their job? I mean, the management really has a lot to answer.
Suki Kim, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Then Brian opened the lines to callers who expressed a mixture of horror and just plain sadness, one suggesting a new hashtag, not me, for the men who had not engaged in predatory behavior. And then there was this guy.
Yeah, Brian, let me just say at the outset, you're one of my favorite hosts. And when I work, I have the radio on my desk and your show on. But I got to tell you, I listened to your statement, and I'm a little stunned. You know, I am just a listener. For years, it concerned me about Hockenberry. I remember when Adora Dioji started, and I thought she was great. And she left. I could say there was. I never forgot it. When she announced that she was leaving, there was something in her voice that just wasn't right. And then other hosts came in, and then suddenly, Hockenberry is by himself. And I suspected all along, something's wrong with this guy. These women cannot deal with him. Something's going on. And with all due respect, and I think you're the greatest, but I was on another floor. I really didn't know. How was I supposed to know? That we hear all the time. I had a kid that was abused. I heard the same baloney. You know, I didn't know. If I would have known, come on, if I knew, Brian, that something was up, are you telling me you didn't know? The people on the station didn't know? Not management didn't know? Or if they did, were they complicit? I suspect you all have some suspicion. It's impossible that just me, just a listener, I knew something was wrong, and you're telling you had no idea. I find it impossible to believe. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air if there is an answer.
Steve, thank you very much. What I'm saying is I didn't know about any accusations of sexual harassment, and though the host obviously didn't get along, and there were things that one could surmise anyone in the public who might have been listening about John Hockenberry's style and treatment of his co-host and come to any judgments about that. That was out there publicly. I'm saying that I didn't know about bullying. I didn't know about accusations of treating these co-hosts badly as co-workers, privately, whatever else was out there publicly that all the world might have been judging, and obviously management must have been judging because it was public. And it is the truth that I just didn't know.
Monday, 8 p.m., local All Things Considered host Jamie Floyd and our own Brooke Gladstone joined Brian Lehrer for a hastily convened live call-in show to again give management a chance to speak. Brooke was able to break some news on that score and to let listeners have their say. Here's Brooke.
Many institutions are having to engage in this kind of reckoning right now. You know some of the names. For us, who lead public conversations about public issues all the time, it's uncomfortable to have one about your own organization, but we feel responsible to you, our listeners, to address it with as much clarity as we can. To be clear, we aren't here tonight as members of management or as representatives for them. We are here as colleagues and journalists, colleagues of the people who've been affected by what happened here at the station. There are questions about the management response, to be sure, but none of those are we going to be able to definitively answer tonight. Laura Walker will join Brian on his show tomorrow morning, and that's when the mechanics of the management's decision-making process and its failures will be explored. So, Let's start by reviewing some of the details of the story that first appeared on New York Magazine's website, The Cut, on Saturday, and was further reported by our Ilya Maritz. Ilya joins us now.
The panel quizzed Ilya on the issue of the three co-hosts who lost their jobs while John Hockenberry retained his.
Yeah, so the host that I spoke with was Celeste Headlee. She was the second host of the program. She describes herself as mixed race, and she arrived at the show, I want to say, in 2009. And at first, it was very collegial with John, but pretty soon she was made to understand that he kind of didn't really want her around. So he would do things to rattle her cage. He had sole control of the volume on the TV monitor in the studio that they shared, for example. He'd have huge emotional outbursts right before going on air, and then undercut her on air in a way that listeners could hear. She had made her dissatisfaction with that situation well known to management, but in April of 2012, she filed a formal complaint with WNYC management that had to go through the HR process. And it was just a few months later in July when she was informed that she no longer had a job because the takeaway was downsizing from 4 hours to one. And of the two co-hosts, management was choosing to stick with John Hockenberry. So that's Celeste's story. That's the story I know the most well. There are two other women. One is Adora Udoji, the founding co-host, who did not respond to my requests for comment. And the other is Farai Chidea, who has given quotes in various places and been quite vocal. And Farai was a frequent fill-in host on the show. She was a really good fill-in host, in my opinion, and I think somebody who probably could have stepped into a more permanent role there, but she didn't, and I think she makes a pretty good case that John chased really all three women out.
Here's an example of that, perhaps, at least as told by former Takeaway co-host Celeste Headlee, who you spoke to. This is 30 seconds of Celeste speaking yesterday.
He would dismiss my opinions when I would voice them on what segments were coming up. He would sometimes get angry. He would argue, especially if it was over a story where I thought I knew the subject matter more than he did. He would bang on tables. He would yell. And then we'd go into the show, and while we were on the air, he would talk over me. He would interrupt me. He would say dismissive things.
A few weeks ago on our show, Brooke spoke to Lynn Farley, the creator back in the 70s of the term sexual harassment. She outlined the need to use details when talking about harassment. Otherwise, the term would be corporatized and defanged. With that in mind, Brooke drilled down with Ilya.
Ilya, could you talk a little bit about the impact of these really toxic encounters with John Hockenberry? Because I think sometimes listeners might wonder, how can a guy in a wheelchair, even if he yells and bangs a table, how is that going to affect you, you know, for years going forward?
The impact on the women, you mean?
Yeah. You know, a kiss sounds so gentle. I mean, he sort of zoomed over to her and grabbed her face in both his hands, as it was described. She couldn't really move. She had to sort of wrench herself out of there. So it wasn't like a gentle lean-in with a soft focus on the camera.
You know, I felt uncomfortable asking for too many details, but it was clearly a tongue-in-mouth situation. It was definitely unexpected and unwelcome, and the producer pretty much said, this can't happen, and fled the room.
Tuesday, 10:30 a.m. The newsroom filled up with reporters, editors, producers, and interns. Sitting on desks, standing in groups, watching through the glass window into Studio CR2, silently waiting to hear from their CEO. Here's the full, nearly 20-minute conversation.
With me now for her first interview on this is the president and CEO of WNYC, Laura Walker. Hi, Laura. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I have questions that I've written and questions proposed to me by various of our colleagues. Many people have questions. You declined interviews for the two reports and all follow-up stories on the Takeaway itself and elsewhere until now. Why was that, and what made you decide to speak publicly now?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me here to talk with you. This is a difficult time, and it's a really important conversation. So I'm here now to answer your questions as best I can.
Our WNYC reporter Ilya Meretz was not able to ascertain whether John Hockenberry's contract was not renewed because of his behavior or because his on-air skills were declining or a combination. Can you tell us the reasons and be specific?
So there's a lot I can't discuss today with regards to specific allegations or actions we took. And let me just talk about this. It's a confidential personnel matter, and please understand this is not out of a lack of desire to understand the facts. We do not disclose confidential employment information. It is a policy we have to protect confidentiality and protect those who complain and share their stories. So I'm going to tell you as much as I can, but I'm sure it's going to be frustrating because people will know more, will want more. So in terms of, we did not renew John's contract, that is true. And that was a decision made by both PRI and New York Public Radio in consultation with each other. PRI is our co-producer. I can tell you right now that John was not fired for sexual misconduct. His contract was not renewed for a variety of reasons. And I'm not going to get into those specifically, but we always look at the end of a contract.
And you can't say under the circumstances whether it had anything to do with his behavior toward his colleagues?
I can't get into the specific information about that. I will say that I knew about some of the behavior. The media reports over the last few days have been deeply disturbing. Some of the behaviors described in the media were known to me and to New York Public Radio. I was made aware of Suki Kim's complaint, which was investigated at the time, and after consulting with our partner, PRI, we took action.
Suki Kim, the writer of the New York Magazine article, who said after she was a guest on the show, Hockenberry sent her many inappropriate, sexually suggestive emails.
That's right. And they're very disturbing. We decided not to renew John's contract for a variety of reasons, including some of what we knew about how people felt. I can tell you, as I did, that he was not terminated for sexual misconduct. We learned about other allegations after he left, some very disturbing ones. And I learned about some of the kissing behavior and some other allegations in the New York Magazine article and in the WNYC article. These are very serious, and this behavior cannot and should not be tolerated, and it won't be tolerated. We need to do better. We need to do a lot better. I deeply regret that our culture and protocols did not work as they should, such that the full extent of the allegations are just coming to light. This alleged behavior happened on my watch, and I take responsibility.
The question the most people ask me to ask you is if John got a settlement or severance of some kind. Did he? And if so, how much?
I cannot discuss any employment matters of that nature.
You don't think you owe that accounting and that transparency to our listener members?
I cannot discuss those kind of that kind of information.
And tell us why?
Because there's confidentiality for personnel matters, and this falls into that category.
Is that company policy? Is that the law?
Yes, it's company
policy. What is that?
It's company policy.
Is it the right policy? Is it a policy that you're revisiting?
Well, what I can tell you is that we are revisiting everything. And I can tell you that our board and we are looking into, at this point, every new allegation that we get about John with the help of outside counsel. We are doing a review of you know, what happened here with the help of outside counsel. And we are also looking very, very carefully at our policies and our practices to make sure that they work way better, because they need to work better. And I can talk about some of those specific things that we're doing.
And we'll get to that. But has the station paid money to accusers to settle any claims against John Hockenberry?
I cannot talk about that.
Same thing.
Yes.
Does WNYC...
But that doesn't... None of this means yes or no.
I understand.
Right.
Does WNYC do non-disclosure agreements with people who bring claims? And if so, why and when are they appropriate?
No, I don't believe so. We do, but we do respect the confidentiality. And most people who bring a claim or bring something to our attention do not want to be known. If they do want to be known, and also it's a tricky matter because you need to be able to also protect the confidentiality and with the person that is being accused. And it is a tough situation here because on one hand, you're always in a conundrum. When somebody comes and brings a complaint to HR or to their manager, then HR does an investigation. And every single complaint that we got, we did an investigation. We did an investigation and we took action. And not every action is apparent to the accuser or to the whole community at large.
Why was John allowed to leave with public praise and the impression that it was his decision?
PRI and we decided not to renew his contract. We did not fire him for sexual misconduct. We gave him the option, as is often the case, to characterize this as his decision.
Despite what you knew about the Suki Kim claims and some of these other things from over the years that have now become public.
I did not know a lot about a lot of those allegations, no.
Well, let's talk about what was known. In the case of temporary co-host for Aisha Dea, she says she spoke to you after Hockenberry said she shouldn't want to stay as a diversity hire, quote unquote, and told her to go lose weight. If you confirmed he said those things, why wasn't that a firing offense and what action was taken?
Again, I can't comment on what action was taken, but it was taken seriously and we did take some action. Look, every day for the last several weeks, I have asked myself whether we took enough action and whether we should really look at our protocols. I apologize to Farai, to Kristen, to the women who came forward. I have a huge amount of admiration and respect for these women for coming forward at this time. And I apologize that our protocols were not there and our policies were not there.
One more specific. You wrote in an email to staff that the station promptly investigates every complaint we receive and take any action, remedial action warranted, including mandatory training, referring to counsel, et cetera. The only training reported in all of this was having co-host Celeste Headley get radio personality training after she complained about John repeatedly undermining her on the air. Why was it Celeste and not John to get the training?
I believe that they both got training. I have to check that out. But this was about helping everyone. There are a lot of people here who get training from Lorna Osman and other radio coaches. And so I believe that we've coached. And John and Celeste got coached, and everyone got coached almost every day by the executive producer of the show and by others. And so I don't even know. Have you worked with Lorna Osman?
No.
So many people have here.
The coming and going of Adora Udoji, for Aisha Dea, Celeste Headley, makes three African-American women sharing the air with John, all leaving while he persisted. You see the impression that leaves.
Yes, and I can't comment on the specifics of these. However, as you may recall, Brian, in 2012, the takeaway went from a four-hour drive time show with two hosts to a one-hour show with one. Look, we are an organization that not only values diversity, but has championed the importance of respecting people of color at this difficult time in our country's history. So these racial comments are especially painful to me. I regret that women, and especially women of color, felt disrespected, and I apologize to them. I, too, have been a victim of sexual harassment, and I know how it feels. I know how it feels. I do not know how it feels as a white woman, but we must do. I do not know what racial comments feel like as a white woman. We must do better. We must start here. how we live each day off the air. We need to have a conversation about systemic racism, about what equity and inclusion means, how we treat each other. We have to each look at our own blind spots, our prejudices. We now have an opportunity for The Takeaway to live up to its aspirations and goals, to lead the American conversation about a changing America. It is now headed by Irva Gunja, a woman of color, as the executive producer, and I believe more staff, the majority of the staff is women.
The editorial power structure does remain largely white. Are there specific plans to address that?
We are looking at that very carefully, and we will be looking at bringing in even more people in power of diverse backgrounds, yes. And we need to be a leader in convening tough conversations like what you do here on your show. It's what we do every day. There was a great two-way the other day that Jamie Floyd of ATC and Rebecca Carroll did on the undeniable role of race in the Me Too era. Rebecca Carroll did a great award-winning Dear President. The Takeaway has done a lot of coverage of racism, Uncomfortable Truths, Confronting Racism in America over the past year. We have podcasts, Two Dope Queens with Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson. We have an LGBTQ podcast with Nancy, called Nancy, with Tobin Lowe and Kathy Tu. We have made a lot of progress in bringing more voices of diverse backgrounds on the air. We have to do better and continue. We have made a lot of progress also in reaching diverse audiences. I think when I came, the audience was about 6% African American and Hispanic. It is now in the high 20s. We have more people of color in upper management. We need to do better. We need to have more people of color in the reporting and in the editorial structure.
So looking forward, you wrote in an email that a conundrum you face is how to reassure employees that complaints are taken seriously while at the same time protecting confidentiality for all parties involved. It's a paradox we're attempting to address, you wrote, as we work to make it less daunting to come forward.
Yes.
Can you describe a solution or a rebalancing that you're developing for that?
Yeah. Well, let me say, it's a conundrum that every company faces. Everybody in this that is dealing with complaints.
And it applies
and
to
it
some
applies,
of your answers here.
Yes,
this
it really does. And I think what I've heard in the last several weeks is that it is really important that we look at how everyone, managers, the HR department, deal with these complaints and deal with them in a way that makes the people that come forward feel comfortable. And we need to provide multiple ways. We are providing multiple ways to report harassment or other inappropriate conduct, speaking to a manager, speaking to HR, leaving a message on a confidential hotline. Union members can reach out to a union. We also have put in an outside advisor. We have to do a better job of supporting those who come forward. As somebody, again, who has experienced sexual harassment and did not report it, I know how hard it is to come forward. And I'm going to make sure that we ask ourselves all the time, are we treating people with as much respect and as much getting back to them with as much information? So we are doing a full review of our policies and procedures with an outside advisor to identify areas where we can be best in class. We will hold mandatory in-person training about harassment and discrimination. We've done online training, but now we're going to do in-person training for all people who have oversight and decision-making authority, and we're providing bystander training to every staff member. I am also holding small group meetings throughout the organization. Starting yesterday, I had my first one, and for the next several weeks.
So open mic as we conclude this to say anything to our listeners additionally that you want to say.
Well, I guess I just want to repeat that I deeply regret that this happened on my watch, and I take responsibility, and I pledge that we will be better, and we will do better internally. We will look at ourselves, And we will do that in a way that is as transparent as we can. And it's going to take everyone to do that, and that we will have these conversations and continue to have these conversations on the air with our listeners about us, but also about this incredibly difficult time that we are in.
WNYC President and CEO Laura Walker, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Laura Walker said nothing outrageous or insensitive, and if the language was a trifle legalistic and pro forma, nobody doubts management's sincere pain and regret about the Hockenberry situation. But the elephant in the newsroom this week is, what else? Are there other secrets? And will the institution live up to its rhetoric? This is, of course, the question also being asked at NPR, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, CNN, PBS, and every place else that has had to reckon with its role in the culture of abuse. But what makes us all distinct from the civilian world is that those asking the questions are journalists. And they, we, will be digging for the answers.